Welcome to the Been There, Done That podcast with Angela Dunn Cartledge. Hey there, it's Angela from Been There, Done That. If you're navigating the wild, unpredictable world of grief, I want to invite you to something special. It's called Messy Mornings, and it's our free weekly newsletter filled with real talk, gentle reminders, and support that actually meets you where you are. Each week, I'll send you stories, reflections, healing prompts straight to your inbox. No fluff, no pressure, just the space to release, feel, and heal. You don't have to do this alone. Head over to donethatpodcast.com and sign up for Messy Mornings. It's totally free, and it's made with you in mind. I've been there, and let's walk through this together.
Hi, everybody. This is the Been There, Done That podcast, and I'm Angela Dunn Cartledge, your host. I'm here with my new lovely author extraordinaire friend, Lee Shulman, and I really am excited to have this conversation. How are you today, Lee?
I am doing very well. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your podcast. It is wonderful to be here.
Thank you. I'd love for you to tell our audience a little bit about yourself and what brings you to the show.
Well, okay, so I'm a writer, I'm an author, and I work with other writers to help them figure out what it is they want from their writing lives and then make that happen. And a lot of it deals with telling your story, being honest about your story, dealing with a lot of things that aren't that easy to deal with and learning how to be honest with them. And the other side of what I do is helping people figure out what is it they actually want in their writing lives, because knowing what you want, and I think you actually have a podcast episode that's how do you know what you want, or knowing something about knowing what you want, which that was the first one I went to, because I feel like that's kind of where we always begin, particularly when things get difficult or you're trying to do something new. Knowing what you want is really useful. And what brought me here is I think we crossed paths on Threads, and we're all experiencing certain levels of grief. And that, I think that's what caused me to reach out to you, just the discussions that you were having online. And I kind of wanted to be part of it.
I'm so glad that we have already connected and that we've had such fantastic conversations so far. And I love following you. I love listening to the things that you bring up, because you're very gentle in your thought-provoking questions, that you bring up things that really are good for us to challenge ourselves, but also, like I said, in a gentle way, but it's so kind and thoughtful. So I just want to thank you as well for your efforts on that behalf. So
I am recommitting to showing up as the person I most want to be, because social media is so triggering, and it can be so supportive, and it can also be so triggering. We are on the platform, and we choose at any moment how we react versus respond. And, you know, so I try really hard that if I disagree with somebody, I do it in a way that's respectful. Or if something has crossed the line for me and I'm feeling myself like wanting to, you know, yell at somebody or say something obnoxious, then I just shut it down and walk away, that I don't even get involved, because it's just not worth additional nervous system, you know, engagement for things that don't help us.
It's so real. And the interaction to me is the important piece. The connection is the important piece. But when you get to that level where there's no longer a connection, it's not valuable to try and, most of the time anyway, not valuable to try and recover that, right? It's different if you're talking to a friend or a family connection or something like that, a colleague that you're working with, a client that you're working with, anything like that. But when it comes to something like a stranger or even somebody that you've gotten to know or an influencer or somebody that you look up to online, it is really hard to disconnect from that. And I think part of what I see is that my age comes into play in that way, because I'm so used to having more interactions face to face, that we're used to that. Whereas the younger generations are completely fine with shouting something at somebody and then walking away. They get over it so much more quickly than I do. So there are, I think it's just different in the way that we perceive life also. And I really love how you framed that it is about being respectful, right? Even if we don't know each other, it's about being respectful in our interactions. And I want to sort of morph that into our discussion today, in that to me, we also have to be respectful to ourselves and to our stories. And so to your original point about what you work with your clients on, and I'm so intrigued by this because as you know, I wanted to be an author my whole life. And I, just as a side note, I went out to your website and researched and spent time getting to know you a little bit better, and just resonated so strongly with you speaking about writing as a 12-year-old and saying that writing the things and getting into figuring out what that writing life looked like then. And of course that's evolved and grown as you've evolved and grown. But what I really want to focus on, what you see as that perspective that you bring to people's stories and to their ability to tell their stories out to the world.
Well, the first thing I see, and I see this with people quite often, is many people have this impetus to downgrade their stories. Like, who really wants to hear it? Why is it important? And on the one hand, you know, I've worked with people where, like, how could you possibly think that, you know, your story is completely unique? It's, you know, there's often a lot of grief in it and things that are really difficult. And I think often because you're living it and it's your norm, it's easy to forget that, no, this is an entirely unique story and it's really important to tell it. But even in a person, even if your story is completely different than anyone else's, there are still threads in it that connect with other people. And that's on the emotional level. That's on who we are, how we express anger, how we express grief, how we experience trauma, that even for a person who hasn't necessarily experienced your particular trauma, that the elements of it can often be the same. And then the other side of it is, well, what if you're, you know, I work with a lot of moms, and mom work is often overlooked. And okay, so in that case, it's like, oh, my story is so out there, nobody wants to hear it. And then there's like, oh, my story is everybody else's story, who wants to hear it? And to that I say, well, everyone who understands your story and is experiencing it wants to hear it, because we want to know that we're not alone. Having community, connecting with other people who say, God, I'm so sick of making lunch every day, I just don't want to do it anymore. There are probably millions of people out there that will understand that. And being able to connect with somebody and understand in that connection, for me, is crucial. And it's easy for us to downgrade it and be like, but many people make lunch every day. Yeah, they do. And that's why it's worth talking about. So, you know, that's what I see with people. And then, you know, the next step is how do you start to tell your story?
So what is it that you love to say? What's your favorite, your most common way you coach people to get started, and how they can put a voice and put descriptors around their story?
Well, there are two main things. So the first thing I say, yeah, just start. Because, you know, Stephen Pressfield talks about resistance in, what is it, the War of Art. And one of the things he says is, no matter how long you do it, no matter how long you write, no matter how much you publish, no matter how well people know you, resistance is always going to happen. And I think particularly if you're beginning or you're earlier in the process, I think there's a sense of you're not doing it right. So you feel resistance and you feel like, oh, this isn't right, which leads directly into what my second point was going to be, which is perfection. We expect ourselves to be perfect, and perfection gets in the way of everything.
Yeah, so much.
So the, pra- So the practice of, and I say this all the time, and I have a blog post on it. What if you just did 10 minutes? What if you sat down and wrote for 10 minutes? And it doesn't matter what ends up on the page. That's not the point. The point is the practice of taking 10 minutes and just writing. And it takes off the pressure of being perfect. You're not meant to be perfect. We'll never be perfect. So anyone who's aiming for perfection, you'll never get what you want. You'll never get there because it just doesn't exist. So why not just start? So when I am working one-on-one with people, when they feel stuck and we're talking about it, I'll just say, all right, let's take 10 minutes and write. And that's it. And there's something about sitting in front of somebody who you have asked to help you do this thing where you just do it and all those blocks just kind of fall away. And even people who feel like, oh, I'm going to write badly, it's not going to work out. It does actually work out. It does.
It feels like you're giving them a safe place to start. Like you're giving them a safe place to land even after they start the process. You're giving them the opportunity to say, this is what it looks like and this is how gross I felt about it. But in my experience, just in the writing, just in the expressing it, it changes the story, even, and not in a bad way or a good way. You get a totally different perspective, and you're the one putting it down on the computer or on a piece of paper. You're the one doing it, but yet it becomes its own living, breathing organism as soon as you put it down. And it's so cool to watch that happen. So I love the encouragement that you give, because it is so cool to think I can just spend just this time while we're face to face, while we're talking to each other, and get something written down. And it doesn't even have to be real sentences. I mean, it could just be bullet points, or it can be a picture or whatever that starts the process for you. That is so cool to kickstart that creative process, because I truly do resonate with the connection piece of it, that even if our trauma isn't the same, or even if our grief isn't the same, or even if our shame isn't the same, that we still connect somehow. Tell us about your story, about your journey, how you got to be to here. I referenced your 12-year-old self and journaling after your daughter came into the world, and thinking, I'm never going to get the things that I dreamed of. What does that look like for you? And how did that story evolve for you?
Well, so just to sort of fill in some blanks, when I was 12, writing came pretty easily for me. And even in high school, even though I didn't necessarily take it seriously as, oh, I'm a writer, I didn't think about it like that. I did, but it was easy. And then at a certain point, I became very self-conscious about it. What is this? How is this? But is someone going to like it? What is this supposed to be? Oh, I haven't done this. And even saying that, like, I feel my stomach straightening now. And it's, those are the things that where we talk our way out of it. And, you know, when I said just 10 minutes earlier, I mean, I really do believe in that, because where I am now, where I've written 5 books, I write articles regularly, I work with people in retreats, I've done international retreats, I feel I've done a lot. And I think of myself as a pretty competent person with a lot of experience. And that literally was 10 minutes at a time, you know, because anytime I didn't know how to do something, it was like, all right, just try it. And then if I don't know how, ask for help and get that help and try it again, just little increments at a time. And even though that sounds like too good to be true in a way, it really isn't, because 10 minutes a day over 365 days of the year is a lot of time and a lot of space and a lot of, you know, even if in those 10 minutes, let's say you write for 10 minutes and one sentence comes out of it that you like, and the rest you're like, eh, not so much. That means you have one sentence to build on, and that's all you need. And then I'll say one other thing in that process. learning to trust yourself and believe in yourself. Because I would say that just 10 minutes is one of my biggest pieces of advice. My other piece of advice is trust yourself. You can.
And I think that's what the 10 minutes gives you, is it gives you that opportunity to build that confidence, but also to teach yourself that you can do it. And I cannot tell you how emotional I feel hearing you say that when you were 12 and even into high school, it was easy. I got to college and I distinctly remember having a conversation with somebody and saying, but what if I write it and nobody likes it? And they said, well, they said something to the effect of, you're doing it for the wrong reason. If that's the right reason you're doing it, that's that you're doing it for the wrong reason. And I've evolved that thought process, but it hit me incredibly hard. I also had a professor in college that told me he was surprised I graduated from high school, that I was unable to write in any meaningful way. And I can hear that in what you're saying, that I feel that self-consciousness. I feel that that trigger from those comments. And I know that it has affected my ability to sit down and do the 10 minutes. That's so powerful to hear. And I know that people in our audience are going to feel the same way.
I'm glad. And thank you for telling me that. And I also want to, you know, say, I think many of us have that teacher or that person who gave us that kind of feedback. And it's amazing how one sentence can stop someone writing for decades. And I see that happen often. I talk about, well, and I'll tell you mine, the one that stands out the most for me is I was in grad school, I was getting my master's in writing and education. And I was taking a novel writing course and it was my turn for the novel to go out there. And the first person who talked about it said, well, you know, they say that agents and publishers, when they look at your book, they read the first 50 pages and that's how they decide whether or not they want something. And he's like, and I read the first page of this and I can't imagine anybody would read anymore. It's terrible. In a class with my advisor, and what I say to that is, well, that's not useful feedback. That is not useful feedback. It's no more useful than this is awesome. I loved it. This is wonderful. Everyone will want to read it. And neither of those are helpful. So this is wonderful. I love it. Feels good. And I think that's fine. And I think, to say that to someone, if you don't know what else to say and you loved it, great, go with it. The negative side of it, it just discounts it. You get nothing from it. So I always look at feedback, like, how will this improve my writing? The other thing I will say about that particular feedback that I got was I didn't particularly like his writing. I found it boring and very methodical and sort of rote. It was just formulaic and it wasn't for me. So it made sense that he would relate to my writing like that because it was not, I was still figuring things out. I was still trying to figure out what I needed. I still know his name. I still see his face. I'm not upset by it anymore. It's just that I use him as an example. Here we are 20 years later, where he's still my example of how not to be. So, and one thing I will say is anyone out there who's listening to this, if you have had somebody tell you something that has frozen your ability to write, A, recognize, yes, that happens. B, it's not about you. And I'm going to give you a link at the end of this to add in the notes. So for people to contact me, tell me your story. And it's specifically for podcasts. So it's a contact form specifically for your listeners. Tell me that story and let's work through it, because it's so important to be able to push that into the past and find your way forward.
It's so real. And I didn't even realize until you said that was my experience as well. And I knew that I had had that experience with that professor. But why not now? Why not now? Why can't we try and see where that story would take you, take your story, take someone else? You just don't know what it would do for someone else, who it could help. So that's my appeal. So how do you, for yourself and for your clients, how do you combat the, but it needs to make money? If I'm successful, I want my book to be this. I want it to have this many views, or I want to have this many posts about it, or whatever that looks like. How do you coach people to understand the difference between those two things?
Well, writing and publishing are two sides of the same process. But they're opposite processes. Writing is solitary. Maybe you have some people involved giving feedback or coaching, but ultimately it's you on the page. And most, you can't make money from something until it's finished. So you have to finish the book before the story or the pitch or whatever it is before you can send it out. And that makes a very strong dividing line between the personal and then the sharing with everybody. And the sharing with everybody is literally the opposite process of what you do when you're writing. You're putting it out there. And, you know, when you were saying before that when you write something down, it changes the story for you. So when it's in your head rattling around versus on the page, it changes it. When you send it to somebody else, that changes it too, because you no longer have control over what happens to this thing that you've written, how people read it, how they understand it, and what they take away from it. And it's a different way of looking at it. So you really have to just let go. And there's different stages. So let's say you finish a book, you send it to agents because you want to find an agent. And the feedback the agent gives you is going to determine your next step. So if the feedback the agent gives is, I love this, I want to sign you, great. That's the next step is obvious. However, if it's like, well, this isn't for me, or I don't want to use it for this, or, you know, I have one book that I sent out, I'm querying it now, and I sent out the first chapters for a contest, and it made it to the shortlist, but then it was finally said no, okay, after the shortlist, that was it. All, you know, feedback that you get from trying to publish is like reading tea leaves when you don't actually know how to read tea leaves. It's, you have to kind of guess. So it's a little bit here and a little bit there. And it's like, okay, I got a form letter back from this agent and, you know, from these five agents, but this one really liked the process, that the book itself wasn't for her, but I also made it to the short list, which tells me it's enough information that I can then take that information, because once you hand your writing to somebody else, you've separated from it. You're no longer in it. So that you get that feedback, you can look at their feedback, look at your writing, and it makes you see it differently. And then you can make other choices. As far as the concept of, if it doesn't make money, it's not valuable, is a separate issue. And, you know, does your child's love give you money? No, it actually probably costs money. Does, you know, the person who brought you soup when you were sick cost money? The reality is, the things that are most valuable to us as human beings, that create connection, that create love, that create the things that we really need to survive and be in community, which community for humans is first and foremost, are very valuable, but we do live in a world that doesn't value them because they don't cost money or they don't make you money. And that, I think, requires a mindset shift, that you can be an incredible writer even if you're not making Stephen King money from your writing.
Okay, you just blew my mind. But that is something that I want our audience to hear so clearly, that that isn't the goal. Writing is one piece of it. Publishing and getting all of that feedback and going that route is a totally different path. And you don't have to do both. That's what I heard, that you can have a writing life that is fulfilling and satisfying and beautiful and huge, and it not lead to publishing? You said you do retreats, which is incredibly intriguing to Angela. That sounds really fun. Go somewhere and write and spend time with other writers. Brilliant. Tell us how those happen, how those became a thing, and what any of our audience members can do to be a part of them.
So the retreats began. I had a friend that I knew through travel blogging, and I think she had actually hired me to work with her on her short stories. And as we ended up talking more about writing and other things, and so we decided to launch this retreat. And at the time, she was actually living in China. I was in Argentina. And we decided, okay, let's do a retreat in Costa Rica, because I'd spent enough time there that I felt like I could organize a Costa Rica retreat from Argentina. So we did our first one there. We ended up doing, after I think our third retreat, she left to kind of do her own thing, and I just continued. And then the pandemic hit. And they were in Costa Rica and Nicaragua. Those retreats were 10, we had room for 10 people, and it was in a sort of tropical resort, and we had massages and, you know, everything that you would think of the retreat. And they were really fun, and I really enjoyed them. And then the pandemic hit, and there wasn't travel for a while. And then when things sort of opened up a little bit, I realized I didn't, you know, I'd been using all my vacation time to travel for retreats, which it took me a long time to realize, like, oh, I haven't really actually taken a break in a long time, because I love doing the retreats, and they give me a lot of energy, but they are still work. And so I decided to sort of take a step back I had to take a step back because of the pandemic. But after that, I decided, you know, if I go to Costa Rica, I want to relax somewhat, and there wasn't really time because I was always kind of on. So what I started doing is the retreat that I offer right now is they're really bespoke, and you create exactly the kind of retreat that you want. So I have people coming on their own. I've had sometimes couples coming. I've had, you know, groups of people coming, you know, groups of friends coming. And basically, if that's the kind of retreat you want, I basically say, okay, get in touch with me. We'll set up a call, and we'll talk about what it is that you're writing, what is it that you want from your writing life. And then I create the retreat specifically for the person or people who are coming. And that takes place in Salta, Argentina, where I live. We have an apartment that's in the center of town, and I see it as a really nice mix between, you know, basically it's like being an expat in Salta, but without all the awkwardness of not knowing what you're doing, because I'm here and it's also a mix of having everything you need taken care of for you. So all you have to really focus on is writing.
Yeah. You're coming to stay with a friend almost, yeah, is the way I envision it. That sounds really, really, really amazing. So, yeah.
Yeah. And they're fun. They're intense. And they're always very, very different. Like, I've had people who, you know, they land, and there's one person, she was coming. She had a publisher. She had a publishing date, and she wanted me to work with her on editing the chapters. And with her, it was, you know, from the minute she got here to the minute she left, she was working almost the entire time. Whereas I've had other people who, there was one person who, you know, she was just kind of getting started. She had written a book, and she was just getting started with it. And we did spend time on the book, but she really didn't want to do more than an hour a day of book stuff. And she explored a lot. She went on trips. She came over. We always do a traditional Argentine asado at our house. So for people who are vegetarian, don't worry. It's not only meat. We don't do just meat. But she actually met up with somebody through Tinder and ended up spending some nights and time with him, like dates with him. Mm-hmm. And she was balancing that with the retreat. And that's the only time that's happened. But I was like, I like that. I like that there's space for people to make the choices and do what they want to do and enjoy the time. So she wanted to write, but she also wanted more of a vacation, whereas other people are like, I just want to write, and everything in between. So they're fun. They're intense, but they're fun.
Yeah, it sounds like you said, like a good mix of both, that it gives people a different perspective just to be away from home, just to be out of their routine and to be able to focus. But it also gives them a totally beautiful place to go to, and maybe even a different place to go to that they've never seen before. Tell us how we can work with Lee. And what are the things that we can do to work with you?
All right. So in terms of working with me, there are three main ways that I work with people. One of them is I have a community. It's called the Inspired Writer Community. And that is, it doesn't matter what you're doing or where you are in your writing life, if whether you're just beginning or you've published three books and you know exactly what you want for your writing career, there's space for you there. Because I think of it as a toolbox where there's everything from workshops to access to mentors, including myself, and I bring other mentors in. And there's also accountability and community. So you always have a place to go when you get stuck. If you're feeling bad, there's somebody you can talk to about it. If somebody's giving you super awful feedback, you come to us and we can put it into perspective for you so you're not stewing with it on your own. And that community is relatively small. There's about 50 people in it now. And it has everything from co-working sessions, coaching sessions, meeting up with mentorships, live events, and an entire forum that includes interaction daily, but also a resources forum that has more like 70 different resources for anything you could possibly imagine related to writing. And then I also work with people one-on-one and just get in touch with me. We can talk. And again, it's about let's talk, let's find out what it is that you want. If you have an idea for a book that you're trying to get published and you want to build your writing platform, we can do that. And I also work with people one-on-one on their books. And then finally, there's the retreat.
Oh. I am so excited to continue to know you and to continue to build our relationship, but I'm also incredibly excited to see what the audience does with this, because I see this as being incredibly healing, not just to the writers in the audience, but to whoever those stories connect with. And I'm super excited to just have this moment, this time to learn from you. Thank you so much for your time, for your honesty, and for your thoughtfulness. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me here. I've loved our conversations until now, and this one is no exception.